loved you and it took my breath. And now I think you love me and it scares me to death. Cause now I lie awake and wonder, I worry, I think about losing you.
Oh yeah, we got a win to talk about. We got a lot of things to talk about. Doug Whaley sits on the highest high chair I've ever seen in this room. Look at me. Paul, my head is practically up on the ceiling. Whaley was over in the Crowley spot today. How do I bring myself down? This guy is I guess he's used to being the GM here. He's used to being the boss. There we go. How are you?
I'm good today. How are you?
I've never been better, and I value your inquiry. City limits, everything well in there?
Everything is going fantastic.
It's off. Of course, it just began 5 seconds ago, so it should be. Off the top, brought to you by JP Roofing and Siding. We've got all kinds of treats today. The big boy, Mark Cabali, the general, is going to join us. Dan Zangrilli to talk Pirates. But Paul, in honor of you, I thought we would open with a Wednesday six-pack. There's all kinds of stuff going on that I wanted to talk to you about.
Let's do it.
Would you mind cracking one, please, City Limits? He says, wait a second. Let's go golfing today as well, Paul. May we?
That might be a possibility, yes. We can talk about it.
I think that would be absolutely delicious. There was a basketball trade that I think is reflective of, should be reflective of what the Pirates' mentality should be. We have the NBA draft tonight with a Pitt guy in it. We have Brian Reynolds on an unbelievable tear right now. We have our friend Benzie talking about who may get the Steelers radio play-by-play job. That's an interesting little story. But let's start with this, a six-pack. No, that sounds great, and thank you. Last night, the Pirates win a game. Felt like a big win. We mentioned yesterday it felt like they were at a crossroads, Paul. Brian Reynolds, Nick Gonzalez. I mean, Reynolds has been unbelievable lately, but just the significance of the win and the fact they put up runs, it felt kind of important, maybe more important than a game in mid to late June should feel. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was important for them to get back sort of in the winning column. And I thought that that was a good thing because they really, they were starting to teeter on what, you know, I wrote a column yesterday about what I called the danger zone, you know? So to me, getting back on and beating the pitcher they beat was, I think, also important too, even though there was probably some extenuating circumstances.
Looked like he felt like you did the day before.
That's exactly right. I felt for the guy. But it's, you know, to me now, here's the thing. It's really important. Really important that they win today. Like, they have to win today.
Luis Ortiz on the mound.
Right. I don't even care about all that. You know, people talk about the bullpen game and this and that. I don't care about any of that stuff. All that matters is at the end of the game, they have more runs than the Reds.
I agree. I just think it's going to be harder because now we've seen how many times, and I realize it worked a couple times, maybe luckily, but you kind of need a fifth starter, right? When is Perez going to be ready here?
Right. Well, Derek Shelton told us yesterday he'll be around for the Braves series, so that doesn't matter because it won't be his turn, will it?
At some point, you just make a turn. I mean, they're going to be spacing out Skeens and Jones. You best believe that.
So Skeens on Friday?
Yeah,
and Jones on Saturday.
Yeah, right now that's what
as of right now. But my point is, you know, they could push Perez on Friday, right? And
sure.
Then push Skeens and Jones or Jones and Skeens. I'm sorry, Jones on. No, I'm sorry. Where are we at here? I'm a little. There we are. Jones on Friday, Skeens on Saturday. So if they really wanted to, they could theoretically put in Perez on Friday to give Jones and Skeens an extra day.
Yeah, I don't even think the idea of a six-man rotation is dead around here eventually because they're going to have to be very careful, and Shelty admitted as much, acknowledged as much yesterday with us, I mean, Jones is rapidly approaching his career high in innings in any level of baseball. Right. So they're going to be very careful.
So my thing is, if you put Perez in, it moves Jones to Saturday and Skeens to Sunday. Now, what would be really interesting if they would play this game, I don't know if they would, but how about if they put Perez on Friday, move Jones to Saturday, leave Falter Sunday, and then Skeens can pitch back here?
Yeah, I think you're going to see all kinds of configurations right? coming up. Nothing would surprise me at this point. Limits, crack one. Brian Reynolds is a big story, Paul. He is in the midst of what's becoming a very lengthy hitting streak. He's carrying the team. We asked Shelty, I don't know, a month ago. It wasn't even a question. In fact, after I was done with my little rant with him, he said, "What's your question?" It was basically, there's not a single guy in your lineup right now who seems capable of carrying you. You know, somebody needs to. And that guy turned out to be Brian Reynolds. What a streak. So my question for you is, Brian Reynolds is now second in the National League in OPS among outfielders. Should he be an all-star?
I mean, if this continues, I don't see why not. And then I don't even think it needs to continue as much as it has. I mean, obviously what he's done has just been ridiculous. But if he, you know, over the next 3 weeks, just has, you know, a normal Brian Reynolds kind of run, yeah.
I think
Why
so.
Why not?
I think so. I think OPS is about the best measurement out there without getting into extremely advanced analytics. It's slugging percentage and on base, and he's crushing it right now. One outfielder in the whole National League ahead of him. I think he's an all-star. Now, what could complicate things? What could complicate things here is I don't think the Pirates are getting three. I think they may get two. They had two last year, right? They had Bednar and Keller last year, and they weren't very good.
Right.
This year, I think you're going to cap it at two. What if it's Keller and Reynolds? I was going to say Bud Selig. What's Rob Manfred?
Bob Manfred.
If I'm him, I'm stepping in and saying Paul Skeens has to be an all-star here. Put him on the team. And quite frankly, as harsh as it might sound, if that costs either one of the other two guys their spot, then so be it. Skeens has to be an all-star. Would you agree with that take?
Yeah, I mean, again, we've talked about it many times. Many, many times we've talked about it. The all-star game is for the fans. They're fun. It's about having fun. And it's about what the fans want to see. And I guarantee you there's very few guys out there right now that are more intriguing and more excitable or whatever than Skeens. You know, national guys talk about them. Local guys talk about them, you know. So, yeah, absolutely.
You know, Pony made the case that maybe he should start the game based on your rationale there, Paul, but Tyler Glasnow would be an awfully difficult guy to kick out. Plus, the guy in Philly is having Suarez is having a great year. But I wouldn't be opposed to that either on the rationale that it's a television show.
Right. That's exactly what it is.
And I think the entire baseball world would be riveted to Paul Skeens against Aaron Judge. I think if you put a bunch of matchups out there, you put a poll out there among fans, people who love baseball around the world, really, said, here are some prospective matchups, pitcher-hitter for the All-Star game. And one of them was Judge against Skeens. I think that would win by a landslide. I really do.
Yeah, absolutely. People want to see that. That's what they want to see.
So let's do it next.
Hey, throw me those Purells.
Purells? Yes, of course. Well, who was sitting there?
No, I spilled some.
No, I'm sorry.
All right.
Okay, we've opened it. Open another one. How is IT back there today? Is he doing well?
Doing good, yeah.
Very good. Glad to hear that. He's a hell of a hockey player. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, I have. And Sean Myers has called some of his games.
That's how we knew I mean, I don't believe IT, but sometimes we all have an inflated opinion of ourselves, whether it's on the radio or in sports. But Sean, don't call me Seth Meyers, confirmed that IT is one hell of a hockey player. I'm impressed.
Very good.
Yeah, I'm impressed.
We'll have to look up his highlights at some point.
Yeah, with Sean calling the games, right?
Yeah.
Maybe he can send us something. Rowdy Tellez stole a baseball. Alex Stump put out there this tweet. No major league team has ever allowed Rowdy Tellez to steal a base and then win. 2019, Blue Jays Orioles. Rowdy steals a base. The Blue Jays win. 2022, August 5th and September 8th. Rowdy steals a base. The Brewers win both times. And last night, Rowdy steals a base and he got a couple hits. When will your Rowdy slander end? This guy's becoming a legend all of a sudden.
Yes. If you define a legend as someone who slashes at 228, 289, 304 with less than 600 OPS and still only two home runs.
What about the stolen base?
Wonderful. He's got one. I mean, last night was a good day. He played last night.
It was
night,
fun. It
last
was fun
night
to watch.
It was a good game for him. You know, I thought what was interesting is the Pirates seemed to be a little more aggressive on the bases and tried to do.
Their base running was a giant key to the game. The cruise play was just pure. It was smart, and it was also really exciting to watch.
And it was one of the first times, really, that we've heard Derek Shelton talk about. Talk about manufacturing runs. And, you know, he talked about it on our show yesterday.
Yeah. I think that we may have been the keys to that game.
Try to be creative. Tried to figure out, you know, hey, maybe we suicide squeeze. Maybe we run a little bit more. Maybe we, you know, whatever. That's what I tell you. I mean, so I feel like when you look at it that way, why did it take so long for this to become?
Yeah, I mean, it should become more. He's tried some. They've squeezed before, but I agree with you, and I think he probably does too, that especially in this depressed run environment when you don't have good hitters, but you do have good pitching, sometimes great pitching, any way that you can manufacture a single run, you know, is like a piece of gold. Every run is a piece of gold, City Limits. So I'd like to see more of it. And then, of course, if people get thrown out on the bases like they started to last season. Remember how aggressive the Pirates were early last season?
Yeah. Big reason why they were 20-8.
Yeah, but then they started to get thrown out all the time because teams were on alert, and then we all ripped them for their stupid base running. So let's maybe allow for some grace here. If they're going to get aggressive on the bases, let's accept the fact that that's high risk and high reward. Yeah, right?
Well, I mean, that's what they got to do when their offense with runners in scoring position, most of the guys on the team are batting under 230 with runners on base. You got to find out one way to be able to do it, and O'Neill Cruz taking that extra base is a big reason why.
That was tremendous. Yeah. Off the top, presented by JP Roofing and Siding. All right, let's go.
Can I tell you what's amazing? I was watching the Reds cruise. Run bases. Good Lord, is that dude fast.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. And he takes literally seems like three strides in between each base.
He's amazing.
He just looks like a deer running out there. It's incredible.
I mean, him and the Pirates crews are similar in that they're still working to harness this ridiculous potential.
Can you imagine if they're able to harness both the Reds and the Pirates are able to not only harness, but refine those two guys?
Yeah.
What we'll be looking at?
Something historic, but it ain't easy to do over time. But we'll see. It was a good game for Cruz. And De La Cruz is just ridiculous. Crack one. Thank you, City Limits. That one sounds especially tasty. Paul, there was a notable basketball trade. And first of all, I've never seen anything like this in all of really sports history. let alone NBA history. And I think it might be instructive for the Pirates. I'll get to that for a minute. Michael Bridges goes from the Nets to the Knicks. First time those two teams have made a trade since 1983. But here's the wild part. This dude is now hooked up with three of his former teammates at Villanova. They're right. called the Nova Knicks is what they're called now. With Brunson, Hart, and DiVincenzo. That's four guys from the same national title team are now on a team in the NBA.
Right.
I've never seen that before.
Especially what's funny, you've probably seen the clip that's gone viral many times, but he wasn't the only one that was saying these kinds of things back then. Stephen A. Smith was talking about how that Villanova team had no NBA players.
Did he really say that?
You haven't seen that clip?
No.
He kept going on. But, you know, there are a lot of people that were feeling like, well, boy, Jay Wright is winning with a bunch of guys who are just great college players, and they're just good teammates, and they just, you know, they're not superstar NBA types.
Wow.
Well.
Talk about a frozen take or whatever they call those things.
Turns out they were probably right to win the national title because they legitimately had NBA guys.
Not just guys. Brunson is an MVP candidate going into next year. Bridges has become a 20-point scorer star. DiVincenzo was a star this year for the Knicks, and Hart is like a really good all-around player.
Right.
He has a lot of heart. Do you like that horse? Let's keep moving here.
But I'm just saying that, yeah, the feeling back then, I mean, Stephen A. Smith was obviously the loudest voice about it, and he obviously went He went way too far with it when you said, well, they don't have any NBA players, when there was a lot of people that thought, you know, that Jalen Brunson has a shot, you know.
Yeah.
But that's the biggest thing to me is that, oh, well, they're not prima donna NBA guys. They buy into the team concept, and they're college players, and this is a real team. Well, I guess they had maybe a little bit more talent than some of you wanted to give them credit for.
I've never seen anything like this in all of sports. Basically, an entire college team together in the pros. I might be missing something. But here's the instructive part when it comes to the Pirates. Is that the Knicks hoarded first-round picks for a long time. They gathered resources. President Leon Rose, I should say. The guy running the team. And here's what they dealt for Bridges. Four unprotected first round picks, 25, 27, 29, and 31, and a protected 25 first round pick via the Bucks. I'm not a mathematician. That's five first round picks, four of which are unprotected. But the point is, they hoarded all those things to be able to make a move like this. Move ahead to the Pirates, who have been hoarding resources, making trades for prospects, drafting prospects, everything else for 5 years and tanking. Allegedly, I would hope, in order to try to make a big move or two when they get to the point of contention. Man, I commend the Knicks for this. These guys are young. They're all signed. They're ready to win. The Pirates need to think about that. These resources that they have, namely prospects, what else have you gathered them for other than to move some of them when it's time to win?
Right.
Let's go. Right?
That's just what it comes down to me, is that that's what you do. And I think what the Knicks have basically said is, we feel like we have a team. It's right there. Let's make it better. Let's give it a shot. Let's give us a shot to beat the Celtics. You know, and if that means if we beat the Celtics and win a title in the next 2 years, who cares about the 2029 draft, first round draft pick?
Exactly.
And I think what you're finding with the NBA draft, of course, is that there are a number of guys that are basically, you know, 18 years old that are getting drafted. So if you get those guys, you got to wait 2 or 3 years probably for them to really be good.
Yeah, their 2029 first round pick might not be a player till 2033, at which point Leon Rose and the rest of us even be around. Let's win. But you also don't want to be silly about it.
No,
if you're not ready to win, then you don't make a move like this. The Knicks clearly are. And I would say, and I think a lot of people would agree around baseball, you would agree, that the Pirates, by virtue of having a top three in their rotation that can match anybody in baseball right now, in Keller, Skeens, and Jones, you never know when you're going to have those three healthy and at the height of their powers again. We've talked about this.
Right.
At the most, you'd get about 5 years because then at least one of them will be gone. But then there's the health issue. There's are they pitching well issue. You might get 1 year of that like the Cubs did with Kerry Wood and Pryor. You might get all five. So split the difference and let's call it three and say this is one of them.
Yeah.
So in this case, the Pirates are the Knicks. They're ready to win. Let's go. I'm not confident that they will go. Crack one. Speaking of the NBA draft, Paul, I'm very curious to get your opinion on Bob Carrington. He's in New York. He's going to be in the green room. I see some people have him going to the not till pick number 20 at the Cavaliers. Have I missed something? Our boss back. I didn't know he was a Knicks fan.
Yes.
Did you know, by the way, he was a hell of a basketball player?
I did. I've had
Western New York.
Yeah, I've had this conversation with him.
Fredonia, my dad and brother were talking about old time Western New York basketball. Who's the greatest player? You guys are Richie Campbell. You had Curtis Akin. Right. You had Christian Laettner.
Yeah.
Julius Page. And Spack played against those guys, and they won a state title at Fredonia with him as the point guard. Yeah. How about that?
Yes. I remember having this conversation with him.
But anyway, Bob Carrington, Paul, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe he's just young. He's obviously wildly talented. I didn't have him as a lottery pick, and he might still not be. What do you think his NBA career holds? He's 6'4", 195. I guess he's a point guard. There's really no positions in the NBA anymore. Where is he going to get picked? Would you pick him, and is he going to be a star?
Again, getting back to what we were just talking about with the Knicks, he's going to be a guy you pick and hope that 2 years from now, you know, 2 or 3 years from now, he's really ready to help you. I mean, he's 195 pounds. You know what I'm saying? 6'4", 195 pounds. You're going to have to put a little weight on him. Clearly, he's got some of the intangibles athletically that you're looking for. I think at times he showed he was a pretty good shooter, you know. He's just, I don't know that I'd take him in the top five, but if I had like pick 12, 13, 11, 12, 13.
Really?
I'd think about taking him there because I think he's the kind of player that, again, if you can wait a year or two, wait for him to develop physically, wait for him to develop his game, wait for him to, you know, if you can do those things, I think you're going to have a pretty good player. I mean, to your point, he's a combo guard, whatever that means anymore. That's what he is.
He's going to need to be a great shooter, right, which I didn't really see, but you're right. I mean, then there's no place to develop as a shooter than in the NBA, you know, working out with those coaches, those players every day.
I think
who's he going to guard? All of that.
His best position is going to be whatever the incarnation of point guard is nowadays.
Yeah. And then there's the draft itself, which, you know, trying to compare Carrington to these other guys. I've never seen any of these guys, and neither has anybody else. The draft, to me, has become more of a non-event. Well, the first pick is somebody named Zachary. I don't know what his last name is. Rissache? I don't know. He's from France.
Right.
You know, the second guy is from Australia, Alex Saar. It's become an international game. And in the college game, there's hardly any stars that everybody in America knows anymore either. So the draft to me, and this is probably my fault, has become more, I'm not interested. I'm not really going to watch. I'm curious where he'll get picked. Other than that, maybe Zach Edey, because he's such a curiosity. What is he, 7'4", 7'5"? I'm curious to see where he goes. But other than that, Paul, it's really not that big of an event for me anymore.
Well, here's the thing. It's not, and that's part of the problem. Like three of the first five names off the board today, is it tonight or tomorrow?
I think tonight.
Whatever night it is. I think it is tonight. Three of the first five guys off the board are going to be foreign guys. international guys who we don't really even know anything about. You know what I mean? Even if you're a basketball junkie, you don't really know anything about Zachary Risacker. The second pick is Alexandre Sarr. And then they're talking about the fifth pick being the guy from this Matas Bezulis.
You going to watch it?
It's hard for me to watch it. What's interesting is there are a couple of guys that we but like the Klingon guy from Connecticut, he's going to be a top 10 pick. But you look at all these guys, almost all of them are either from the G League or they're freshmen or they're foreign. Like, it's not like 15, 20, 25 years ago actually 25 years ago, it was all a bunch of high school guys. But it's not like the drafts where a lot of the guys we watched, two or three at least of their years, the two or three of their college years and watched them in the Final Fours and watched them,
Yeah.
A lot of these guys, it is what it is.
I'm curious to see where Zach Edey goes at 7'4", 300 pounds.
This one I'm looking at has him 15th.
Yeah, he can move a little bit, yeah. but man, you could do worse for a guy with an 8-foot wingspan as far as a screener. Screeners are essential in today's NBA. A rim protector, an alley-oop guy, an easy bucket down low. I think he's actually going to have more of an impact than people think.
This one here has Carrington going to Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
The Thunder, well-positioned. Okay. Carrington, a 6'4 guard who improved throughout the season, is an efficient playmaker with room to grow as a shooter and finisher. So they think that he fits in with what they do in Oklahoma City. But, if you really want to have fun, go look at these mock drafts and see how many of these guys – you can honestly say you watched play.
Not close to half for me. Next.
Oh.
Sorry, Paul. Did you want to add
something?
Yeah,
I was going to say, before you do next, hold on. Real quick, let's just do this real quick, Joe, to test your theory there.
All right.
You admit you've never seen the first two guys.
Other than YouTube videos, right.
I'm talking about play, at least play some form of a game.
Yeah, give me some names.
We've seen Reed Sheppard, right?
Yes.
From Kentucky,
yes.
That's one.
Yep.
We've seen Stephen Castle from UConn, that's two.
Mm-hmm.
Third guy we haven't seen, he's a foreign guy. Dalton Knecht, remember him from Tennessee?
No.
You didn't watch Tennessee play this year?
Nope.
He's good.
He's good. So anyway.
You know what his favorite game is?
Connect 4.
Yes.
But okay, so you have two. You already said you've watched Klingon, that's three.
You know what his favorite hockey line was? The French Connection.
Yeah, here we go.
And it's his favorite movie too. I'm sorry, Paul.
That's
go ahead.
All right. You haven't seen the eighth guy because I've never even heard of him. He's from some other country. How about Cody Williams from Colorado?
No.
Devin Carter from Providence.
I've seen him play.
Okay.
Well, I don't have a, an encyclopedic knowledge of him.
You haven't seen this 11th guy. Bob Carrington, obviously. Robert Dillingham, you've seen, from Kentucky.
Yes.
That's six. 14th guy you haven't seen. Edey is seven.
A lot, yes. And he's the biggest curiosity to me. He's the reason I'll tune in for a little while. That and Bronny James.
Yeah.
What about that?
Well, yeah, we'll get to that. Jared McCain, you've seen, so that's eight. You already said you haven't seen Colorado, so I'm assuming you haven't seen this other kid. Johnny Furphy from Kansas.
No.
Okay.
Although when the Furphys come to Pittsburgh every year, always an interesting time.
Do you remember Kyshawn George from Miami?
No.
He played against Pitt a couple times.
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I do.
That's nine.
Yeah.
How about the big kid from Indiana, Khalil Ware?
Yes, and of course, Kyle Filipowski.
That's 10. Tyler Kolek from Marquette?
No.
Okay. Ryan Dunn from Virginia, that's 11.
Yep.
Filipowski is 12.
And that would be about it.
Isaiah Collier, no?
Nah, the name, yeah, but okay. Not really. I don't have a working knowledge of almost any of these guys.
All right.
And I used to know them all going into the draft. But again, it's become an international game, but it's also become a game where in college, because of a variety of factors, you get money to play elsewhere on your way to the NBA draft. Guys leave after a year, all that. It's just, it's not notable to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Well, the thing about,
Crack it. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the thing about Bronny James is I would laugh so hard if someone takes him ahead of, you know, the plan is the Lakers take him at 55.
Would you take him early and force the Lakers to trade with you? It seems like the whole league is afraid of LeBron James. Like they're just going to wait for the Lakers to take him and they don't want LeBron's wrath. I would draft the kid at 50.
Right.
And then command a ransom from the Lakers. That's what I would do.
I would take him. Like, say you're, let's see who's right ahead of them. Golden State.
Yeah.
I'd take him. And then command some. You're right.
I would love that.
How about, I'll even give you one that's even better. We just won a championship. Boston picks at 54.
Yes.
We're taking them.
That's now a what? Great, they're picking 54?
Yeah.
That's the spot. The Celtics and Lakers.
Right before.
Oh, that would be delicious. You want Bronny? Here's what you have to give up. Crack one, please, City Limits. I wrote about this for the Post-Gazette this morning, Paul. The 2024 Hockey Hall of Fame class announced Alexander Mogilny snubbed for the 15th straight year, and guess who's in? Colin Blanken-Campbell. So now you have a baseball Hall of Fame where Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens are out, but Bud Selig is in, and a hockey Hall of Fame where Alexander Mogilny is out and Colin Campbell is in. For what? What's he in for? Gary Bettman mentioned, he had a lot to do with the rules changes and he's a lifetime servant to the league. And, you know, he was a nondescript player, a nondescript coach. And as the czar of discipline, there was an email scandal about 10 years ago where it was revealed that he didn't like Mark Savard. And then everybody wondered once the emails were revealed, wait, did that have something to do with him not suspending Matt Cook for basically ending Mark Savard's career? There were a lot of questions about that. He seemed to be pressuring people within the league about penalties called on his own son, Gregory Campbell. What the hell has he done to be in the Hall of Fame? Mogilny had a 76-goal season. He was the first Soviet defector, which could get him just that in the Hall of Fame. 1,000-point scorer, and somebody on that committee, and they're told not to talk, the 18-member committee. Somebody has a grudge. Somebody's keeping him out. This is a joke, Paul. Do you agree?
Well, it's one of those things where all of these Hall of Fames, we can point to stuff like this, right?
Yeah.
And I loved in your column today where you basically led off with, you know, making sure that you, the Baseball Hall of Fame is the biggest joke.
By far.
By far. But it's one of those things where what I don't like about it is that the committee doesn't have to answer.
That's just a disgrace.
You know,
it really
is. Self-serving, as nauseating as these posts from baseball writers explaining their votes every year are, at least we kind of have an idea of where they're coming from and what they're thinking. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, like when Ron used to stand over there and defend not having anybody on his Hall of Fame ballot and not putting guys in, I would vehemently disagree with him, but I'll tell you what, he had the guts to stand there and make his case every time and let the world know I'm one of the people keeping these guys out. I'll give him credit for that, you know?
Right, right.
These guys are basically, they're ordered to stay in secret.
Well, that's the thing. That's why. Because you're right. There's probably all kinds of these little grudges or whatever.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That go on and on and on, but to your point, why is Colin Campbell in?
It's incredible.
I mean, and
because it's the old boys network. That's why. Brian Burke is one of the selection committee members. He's a guy that defended Colin Campbell after that email scandal.
Right.
The whole thing is sickening, I think. Mogilny. I mean, Alexander Mogilny. If you ever saw him play for 5 minutes, you'd put him in the Hall of Fame. Fan Hotline, presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Twitter, brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. And the text line, brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We got a lot of things coming up, including the general next with Starkey's Card of the Week. We're going to talk about the Penguins going into the offseason, the official offseason here. There's already been some very notable hockey moves. We also have more Pirates to talk about. We're going to break down some of Shelty's quotes yesterday, right, including on his own job security. That's all coming up here.
Yeah. While we are in this little mode here, I got a text from Dave Saba. Do you know Dave Saba?
The Saba Tooth Tiger, yes. What'd he say?
Just basically said one thing that can be guaranteed. After tonight, Duquesne will still be the only school to have the first overall pick in back-to-back NBA drafts. Dick Ricketts in 1955.
Yeah.
Sahiga Green in 1956.
That's awesome.
There you have it. Duquesne is the only school that's ever had them back-to-back.
Shall I call you Ron, Dr. Dick? What should we go with here?
You can call me Ron.
City Limits. That, of course,
good
is Dr.
Duquesne.
Dick from Duquesne, right. Another notable Duquesne sports figure, right? In our humble opinion. Paul, yes?
Very much.
Yeah. Very much.
All right, Paul, you have a new flow.
Speaking of
all the topics at hand.
Speaking of doctor.
Yeah, let's go.
Wait.
Shall I call you Ron, Dr. Dick? What should we go with here?
You can call me Ron.
This is Paul Zeiss. New Flow Men's Health has incredible success in treating men with erectile dysfunction. Oh, let me try this again. In fact, I think the people at New Flow should hire Dr. Dick. Anyway, New Flow Men's Health has had incredible success in treating men with erectile dysfunction. For a limited time, New Flow is offering exclusive pricing for significant savings. Haven't you suffered long enough? No pills, no injections, no games. Pittsburgh guys helping Pittsburgh guys. Call for call 412-784-9000. That's 412-784-9000 today to take advantage of this great offer and tell them Paul sent you.